Welcome to Tad Dickel's Leadership and Strategy Podcast, bringing you authentic conversations with leaders about their approach to leadership and their organization's strategy for success.
Hello and welcome to the Leadership and Strategy Podcast. This is your host, Tad Dickel, and I'm here today with Stephen Imch. He is the president of the OAR Fellowship, which is a post-undergraduate program in central Indiana currently, and a really prestigious program that provides great opportunities for students right after they graduate from college. And so I'm going to, first of all, say welcome, Stephen, and maybe after that, share a little bit about your background.
Yeah, thanks, Ted. Happy to be here and be talking to you. Always a joy. My background's kind of all over the place. And when you look at it, you'll ask the same question I always do of like, what's the plan here? But that's part of the fun. So I started out, I'm actually from Phoenix, Arizona. Originally started out in childcare, family-run business for about 50 years. So grew up in that from the age of 13 through the age of 24 when I moved out to Indiana. Worked in a variety of positions there, janitor all the way up into helping run ops for the business. It was a sizable business, about 300 employees, about 1,800 kids a day through across all of our different centers. Wanted to get out of that, so moved out to Indiana. Was super blessed to end up at a software startup here in town of Indianapolis called Lessonly. It was a training software for customer-facing teams. Great, great culture, really inspired by the leadership there, Max and Connor. Max even wrote a book that I would say changed my life called Do Better Work, which how I lead is largely from that, and how I parent and how I act as a husband and just partner in life is largely driven by Max's book, Do Better Work. Can't say enough good things about that. From there, I went and spent about 2.5 years in the public sector at the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. Originally hired to focus on the entrepreneurial ecosystem, but started my job in March 2020 there. So it was kind of crazy time. So bounced around to a lot of different COVID activities for the first 12, 18 months. While trying to still balance the entrepreneurial stuff and ecosystem building, then rounded out my time there, focused on innovation and the venture capital ecosystem. So working with the Next Level Fund, Elevate Ventures, and other items like that to help spur investment in startups here in Indiana, not just Indianapolis, but across the whole state. In August of, it would have been 22, got approached and ultimately signed on to become president of OAR Fellowship. Really incredible organization that I'm really blessed to be a part of and help steward now, sitting in the seat I do, helping drive change and architect what the next phase looks like, which I'm excited to hopefully get into here with you today as we're talking. I'm sure it'll come up, but just a hugely impactful organization on this state as a whole and a full circle moment for me. Lessonly was started by a couple OAR Fellow alumni, Max and Connor. We're both OAR Fellows, came out of the program, and this was Lessonly is what they did coming out of it. So it's fun for me to be able to give back to a city and a state that's given so much to me and an organization that's given so much to me as well. So happy to be here.
Awesome. Thanks, Stephen. Maybe we can start on a light note. So
those are my favorite.
For our listeners, we're recording this. I typically record in advance, kind of batch several recordings together in one day. And so we're doing this the day after the Super Bowl. And so I was curious, do you have a favorite halftime show, or maybe just comment on the halftime show from last night?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a favorite one. My family growing up was not a very big sports family, so we didn't watch a whole lot or pay too much attention to them. I'll say the biggest disappointment last night was the fact that Taylor Swift didn't make a surprise appearance during the halftime show. I would have bet money and subsequently lost money that she would have been on that stage at some point. But I thought Usher put on a great show, and it was nostalgic, some of those songs, listening to him.
Yeah. No, I kind of wondered if there was a chance that she might get pulled in. And
yeah, for sure.
Definitely would have gotten people's attention.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, it was she was one of the key players in that whole Super Bowl yesterday. It's like
exactly.
So many people are all of a sudden Chiefs fans because they're Taylor Swift fans.
Right. That's funny because my third grade daughter was saying that her whole class was rooting for the Chiefs, and it's just because of her.
Yeah, her, and then like that quarterback series got a lot of Mahomes fans too on Netflix.
For sure. Well, so let's transition and talk a little bit about the Orr Fellowship. And one of the exciting things, we'll talk about this a little later in the podcast, is that by the time this recording is announced or is released, that we will be announcing that the Orr Fellowship will be expanding into the Evansville region. So Southwest Indiana companies will be able to apply to be business partners and to sponsor a fellow. People getting ready to graduate from college will have the opportunity to apply and start in this really prestigious program in summer of 2025. And so I've been honored to be part of some of those discussions and some of that work, and just excited for this opportunity in our community. So maybe, Stephen, if you want to give us a little bit of history about Orr Fellowship and kind of what that means and why it's been such a big success and what it contributes to Indiana.
Yeah, happy to. And this, I can go down this rabbit trail for a long time, so help me pull up, Tad, if I start talking too much. But Orr Fellowship's been around for a little over 20 years now. We were started by a group of people coming out of Angie's List. So Bill Osterly, Scott Brenton, and Angie Hicks, which is, like the Angie that Angie's List is named after. They were trying to grow Angie's List, and talent, like we all know now, was just as much of a problem then for them. And they wanted to build a compelling business here in Indiana. They really believed in it, and I certainly don't need to speak to the commitment of those three people in there to Indiana. So they, as they were growing Angie's List, Orr Fellowship was really their answer to some of the talent problems, not just for their own business, but hopefully for Indianapolis and then Indiana broadly. So those first classes were just 10 fellows apiece. It's pretty incredible. If you talk to Scott Brenton, he's still on our board today, one of the original founders. The original way they would recruit is they would call universities and ask for a batch of resumes, and they'd go through them by hand. And somebody that they liked their background, they'd cold call them and try to set up an interview with them. I think pretty great, and like very much the entrepreneurial spirit that we still try to operate with today, where it's like we don't have to have all the answers or the processes, but let's try to figure out the best way we can forward, even if it means muscling through it here. But so first decade was about 10 fellows apiece, and then we've grown our class sizes since that day to today we have about 150 fellows in our program, or a two-year program, so we take in a class every year, so that's two classes overlapping there. So class sizes vary from, I would say, 80 to 100 fellows a piece. That's generally our target. We continue to grow that upwards as we continue to scale and get good at what we do here and better and better. So every year we run a pretty robust recruitment process on both the partner company side. That's what we call the companies that come in and ultimately hire fellows as partner companies. And then the fellows themselves. So these fellows are people in their senior year of college. They're applying to Orr Fellowship in August to September. And this year we had a little over 1,000 applicants applied to the program. And we whittled that down over the subsequent months to the, again, like 80 to 100 that we ultimately put in front of the companies as potential fellows. And then they make that final call on whether they want to bring that person into their team or not. So it's pretty competitive, about 10% acceptance rate. And I don't say that to brag about how many people we turn away, but just it is hard to get into, and we vet pretty intensely for quality, largely on the back of Patrick Lencioni's book, Ideal Team Player. We look at humble, humility, hungry, their ambition, and smarts, both on the book smarts, but also emotional intelligence, people smarts. We want people that are willing to lead. Our mission here is to recruit and develop the next generation of business leaders and entrepreneurs. And so it's a core tenet of ours to find people that are able to lead and lead well and put people first. So yeah, today we have about 70 companies that partner with us, that where those 150 fellows are placed at. Throughout the 2 years, we run a pretty robust event programming calendar as well. So we'll do anywhere from 3 to 6 events a month where we run them through. We do like executive leadership coaching. We do pitch competitions, case competitions. We do consulting for nonprofits where we'll take on strategic projects for them. We do volunteering. We'll bring in business leaders to speak and just connect with the fellows. We involve our board as much as we can, because our board is largely the business leaders we want these fellows to turn into, ideally. So it's a pretty a wide variety of programming, and that's on purpose. We try not to be too prescriptive, and like some of the magic of learning and new ideas is when that fellows are chasing their own curiosity, and we have some prescriptive learning that we're giving them too. So it's that overlap where they, those two things can come together on that Venn diagram. So that's roughly what it looks like today, Tad. Does that help provide some clarity on it?
Definitely. I think that's a great description. So these are, I mean, highly talented, ambitious young people just graduating from college that are trying to kind of figure out, maybe they have a degree, but they're not exactly sure what they want to do. And this program kind of gives them different opportunities in terms of like doing work and doing work in a company. And then also a lot of learning opportunities. And it sounds like there's a big social networking piece too.
Yeah, certainly. We can't underscore the dense network you build while you're in our fellowship enough. We have the fellows that you're in the program with concurrently, but we also have an alumni network of, it'll be over 600 this summer. So it's a pretty large number. And that's, again, across our 20 years. So some of these people have had successful exits and startups, or they sit in executive level positions now. So it's a really great network for you to be able to access and, you know, scroll through your LinkedIn and see who your shared connections are that you both were in our fellowship. So I think it's really powerful for the fellows that actually activate that network for themselves. And then, yeah, I think the people coming in, real high potential, they have to have displayed leadership. So whether that's on campus or off campus, I really don't care if you're a shift leader at Wendy's or if you're student body president. I just want to see you stepping up and taking ownership and responsibility and having other people have to follow you. That's what we're looking to find, is like the people willing to step up and opt into that responsibility. And yeah, it's really proven out to be highly effective and impactful on the people coming into the program and the businesses participating. Fellows end up staying about 75% of the time after the 2 years. They stay on with that company for a longer term commitment, which is great, a great outcome for us. And then we just did an alumni study. And one of the things we looked at was income of our alumni relative to an average college graduate. And average college graduates making about $3 million over the course of their lifetime. And from what we gathered from the survey, our fellows are on track to make $7.5 to $8 million. And those are real numbers, right? These are changing people's lives. And that's not anything to shrug at. So we're really excited at the impact that they're having on each other, and then the impact that this program and the connections they're making are having on their lives and the success they're able to generate.
Right. And there's, I mean, I've seen studies that really look at how people find jobs and how important our network is, and often what separates people that are wealthy is access to a network of people. And one of the things I really like about the Orr Fellowship is that it really allows people to build that network at a young age and expose them to people that are extremely successful, that have connections, you know, in the community and beyond. And gives them the opportunity to meet them and to learn from them and to, you know, make other connections. And so I think that really sets young people, you know, a step ahead of their peers.
Yeah, I think like a quality network, you know, speaking of somebody that moved here and sort of had to build that on their own, like my wife's family lives here, so I had some help from them, certainly. But that's a hard thing to build on your own, Tad. And you probably did it when you had to move to Evansville too. It's like, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of rolling up your sleeves, a lot of events, a lot of coffee meetings and all of those things. One of the benefits that fellows get that I think they don't know that they necessarily get is not just like the network itself, but then like the quality of that network too. Like given the amount of vetting of everybody that's like involved in touching this program, like it's really hard to build a network of the quality that you can get through or at the age that these fellows are at just on your own. Like it might actually be impossible too. Like it's tough.
Right. No, I can understand why you would say that. And so I wanted to transition a little bit to this, as I mentioned a little bit ago, that the Orr Fellowship is expanding into the Evansville region. And we're really excited about this possibility. There were conversations you know, several years ago at EREP, at the Evansville Regional Business Committee, talking about, you know, how do we attract talent? How do we retain talent? And so I would say over the last few years, there have been serious conversations about, should we create, should we partner with the Orr Fellowship and have another, if you we want to call it a chapter here, or do we create something new, a new organization or new experience that would provide a similar type of experience? And after we did some study and of the available possibilities and had some conversations with you and your board, I think those leaders really unanimously felt like a partnership with the Orr Fellowship made just a lot of sense for so many reasons. However, that's a new thing for the Orr Fellowship because you have solely focused on the central Indiana region since your inception. And so I'd be curious, you know, why did this seem like a great fit for you, and what are your hopes for this collaboration?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. There's a lot of reasons why I was inspired by this opportunity, certainly. And I think keeping in mind like my background of being at the IEDC prior to coming to Orr Fellowship, I really approach things in like a statewide lens. I don't overly focus on just Indianapolis. And so that's really what I came into Orr Fellowship with. I knew talent is not a problem. That's strictly something that we're working on in Indy. This is something we talk about across Indiana, and it's actually a major concern. It's the brain drain. We've been talking about it for decades. And most people don't have great answers and certainly don't think Orr Fellowship is the answer, but I think we can be part of the solution for communities. So I felt coming into this organization that there's almost a responsibility we have to serve communities with something as compelling as Orr Fellowship and the results that we've been able to retain. About 60% of our alumni across that 20 years are all still in Indiana, which is great. That's, again, like across 20 years, 500-something people. So it's like, that's a lot of people that we're keeping here in the state that might have otherwise left. And these are high potential people. So you can imagine that they're probably more economically mobile than others too. So they could really choose to be anywhere, and we're helping them pick Indiana. So as I got to know the Evansville group, it was the timing was interesting as I had just come into my job about 3 weeks prior to you all reaching out. So not always the best time to be talking about an expansion as you're, you know, just trying to onboard yourself to the organization. But I felt that it was necessary to at least give it some due diligence. So I got to come down and meet with you all. And I walked away very impressed at the collaboration and alignment I experienced with specifically the Evansville Regional Business Committee. That's who I've spent the most time with in Evansville so far. The board, very aligned, very plugged in, and very collaborative, and just wanting to set the region up for success. It seemed like a very distinct lack of egos in a room, which I always appreciate. It makes everything a lot easier when the mindset is we don't care who gets the credit. We just want this stuff to get done because it matters and it's important. And that really seems like the approach that you all take. So I've appreciated that a lot. And so I brought it back to the board, and it was a great opportunity for us to reflect on, like, why did we start in the first place? Why are we here? Why do we exist? And it became very clear that, like, we never really thought of this as a solely Indianapolis-driven enterprise. Like, we never really thought of this as not expanding. We called it the Indiana Entrepreneurial Fellowship, or the Governor Bob Orr Indiana Entrepreneurial Fellowship, which is indeed a mouthful. So thankfully, we rebranded to just Orr Fellowship at this point. But our sights were never set on just central Indiana. We wanted to impact the state and wanted to build something that matters. And we've been able to do that in central Indiana. And so now with the great partners we found down in the Evansville region, we felt like now would be the right time to try this and try to make this work. We believe we can. We believe we have what it takes as an organization to build this out. And we believe we have the partners to actually get this thing off the ground quickly and successfully. The final thing I'll say here on this point, Tad, and then I'll pass the ball back to you, is we invited some Evansville members to our board meeting in December, where we were making a final decision, at least for the time being, on whether we were going to proceed with this or not. After the Evansville crew wrapped up their presentation, Scott Breton, again, one of the original founders of Orr Fellowship, said, the way this group is talking about Evansville and this region is the exact same way we talked about Indianapolis 20 years ago. We talked about this growing city. We talked about the potential that's here, and we talked about the partners and the networks we were building and how important young, talented people were going to be as a part of that. And so it was really a very full circle moment for us to find a city that's in a position similar to where Indy was when we started and take the lessons learned from here as we've grown to the size we're at now, and then roll those out in a new city. And I said that was my last thing, but I have one more thing. Governor Bob Orr is or was from Evansville. And so it's very fun for us to almost have a homecoming here in Evansville and come back to Orr's hometown and help build something special again in his memory, just like we have in Central Indiana.
Right. No, I agree that there really is a collaborative spirit here, and a lot of people came together to voice their support for an Orr Fellowship, and want a lot of business leaders have said they want to be involved and support this effort. So we're really excited about all of the possibilities. So let's talk a little bit about, and the details are still getting fleshed out, obviously, because we don't plan to start the first fellowship until 2025, and it'll be summer 2025. So really students that are college students who are graduating next academic year would potentially be able to apply. But as you think about the next, 18 months or so, what does that timeline look like in your mind?
Yeah, great question. So for starters, I'm going to be in the region probably about once a month at minimum, building those connections. And Tad, you've been super helpful in connecting me with people as I've come down. And so very thankful for your support on this initiative. So I really want to just understand the community and get to know people down there and help find the right partners for us. We have the high-level partners with ERBC and EREP, but as we move into like, okay, who are our actual partner companies? If we don't have partner companies, we don't have fellows. Like, these things are tied at the hip. And so who are those actual partner companies that are going to hire people be? Can they provide a great experience? And we try not to be overly burdensome with our companies that partner with us, but there's a few things we do require. Of, we want a dynamic and meaningful work experience. So ideally, they're not putting Orr Fellows in a corner where they're just plugging data into a spreadsheet. I think there's a time in every job where you're having to do some mundane stuff, but that is life. Like, I have to do that too, is my role too. So all these things have seasons, but to the extent that they can help it, they're putting these fellows on meaningful projects. They need to have executive access where they're not necessarily working hand in hand with the CEO or somebody on the executive team, but they do need to have access to them, whether that's, for some people, it's a quarterly lunch where they get to go out with somebody on the executive team and talk through what they're seeing, what they're feeling, how they're seeing things from their seat in the business. And then the executive can corroborate or help correct from their seat in the business and help their sense making in the business environment. We ask for some flexibility for their engagement in Orr activities, specifically on the PTO side. And then we do ask for a commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion, ideally on the front of where you understand that having a diverse workforce matters, having diverse perspectives in the room happen. We don't necessarily mandate that you have to have a director of DEI or some chief diversity officer, but someone on the team, or at least an organizational mantra of, hey, we're better with more perspectives in the room, and we're better as we're providing more opportunity to people that maybe don't have it. So all of those things kind of funnel into what makes a great partner company experience for us. And so as I'm coming down, those are some of the things I'm looking for in meetings with companies and getting aligned with them on. And then additionally, meeting with universities where it makes sense to, more so my counterpart, as she comes down with me, she runs a lot of the recruitment side, but building those relationships with universities to help spearhead getting actual fellows for this program as well. So Tad, you've mentioned it, but to put a really fine point on it, like, we'll be looking for seniors next year, or people graduating. So yeah, seniors either in December of 2024 or May of 2025 are the people we're going to be looking for, whether it's from grad school or undergrad. We don't necessarily care, but it does need to be like your first work experience. So looking for a younger crowd, like as high potential as possible. If you know of anybody that would be interested, our website, orrfellowship.org, has tons of information that you can see and understand and even apply to get on a wait list and be notified as updates come out. But we're going to be looking to place about 15 to 20 fellows this year, or next year, excuse me, June 2025, for our first fellowship class. And that'll be across, depends on a few details, but probably across 10 to 12 companies that we partner with ultimately. And then the year after that, we'll be growing to 2025, most likely, and probably ending up around a 15 different companies mark. So to get that accomplished, my visits all funnel into that. Ultimately, we'll be hiring somebody in the Evansville region, or at the very least contracting with somebody that's in the region, has the community ties and can be plugged into these relationships. And we want somebody boots on the ground. So it's not me from 3 hours away trying to run this or my team, but somebody actually there that's plugged in and can be supportive and help be the convening force for these fellows and get them plugged into not just the companies and those networks, but then also all of the exciting projects that the region has going on right now. I think there's no shortage of impact that fellows can have down there should they get plugged in. So very excited for that part of it. But that's roughly speaking the timeline right now.
I'm sure a young person getting ready to graduate from college is also thinking about a first job and what compensation might look like for the OR fellowship. What can you share about that?
Yeah, we the salary right now, we set that for people coming into the program just to create fair expectations for everybody involved as best we can. One other point on people coming into the program, and this leads into the compensation discussion, but we take people from any university. We take people with any degree type. We don't exclude people for any of those reasons. We're really looking for people, again, with like the humble, hungry, smart traits. And then the technical acumen, we're a little less interested or care about. It's more the character traits that we're looking for. And then I think because of that, and because these fellows generally come in with more of a generalist skill set, we set the salaries right now where in year one, it's a starting salary of $53,000 a year, plus whatever benefits you do that are normal for your company. Bonuses, equity, commission, if you do any of that, we would expect the same for fellows. In year two, there's a suggested bump, but we really think of this as like a minimum or a floor to $55,000. But we don't put a ceiling on that. And I want to emphasize that the year one salary is a starting salary. So should the fellow come in and just be doing an amazing job, which is our expectation, and your business has the ability to pay them more, you would like to reward some of that great behavior after they start, you're more than welcome to increase their compensation in whatever way you see fit and whatever the company considers reasonable for them and market rate. So the only other thing on top of that is OR Fellowship collects partner company dues. That's how we operate. We do our best to stay tied at the hip to industry. And I think it's one of the key reasons for our success over the years is how tight we've been with industry and industry led primarily in this effort. And so each year, it's a 2-year program. So it's $6,000 a year, totaling out to about $12,000 for a fellow while they're in the OR Fellowship program for a company. So the $53,000 a year salary benefits, $6,000 a year is the financial considerations for fellows and for companies.
Okay, great. I think that's important because really it's not a, it is a job that you are starting and you're making a good salary, especially in this region for a recent college graduate. I mean, there are certainly jobs that are going to pay more, jobs going to pay less. But one of the things I'm excited about in the Evansville area is that we're starting to look at partner companies and really trying to have a diversity in terms of types of companies, industries, yep. And sort of longevity of companies from established companies to companies more in a startup phase. We're also looking at the possibility of nonprofits, manufacturing, healthcare, financial services. I mean, trying to get across the continuum in terms of possibilities for this region. So I think it'll provide quite a few experiences for young people.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that. I think it's going to be really interesting. One of the things I'm excited about by expanding to a new region is that OR Fellowship that exists in the Evansville region is going to be different in some ways, and it's going to have its own flavor to what exists in Central Indiana. And there's parts of that that are going to be really fun to see just the characteristics of the Evansville region play out through Ore Fellowship. So the partner company makeup will certainly be different. We have a decent like software tech startup scene here in Indy, and there's less of that and more manufacturing in Evansville. And you have some more maybe traditional startups that we could potentially partner with. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see that play out, and we'll also adjust our curriculum where it makes sense to serve the region on the things that actually matter there as we do in Indy. So it'll be really interesting to see how it sort of plays out here.
One of the things that I think will be unique in this region is from initial conversations, the interest level of some really top level executive CEOs in this region. They've really expressed interest in being involved. For example, Jim Ryan, CEO, chairman at Old National Bank. He currently has a daughter in the Ore Fellowship in Indianapolis, and he's very interested in being involved. And I think having people like that means a lot to a fellow to have exposure to an executive who really wants to support their growth and development.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This goes back to our earlier comment about the network, Ted, but it's like, I don't know how long it would take. And nothing against Jim, which is Old National Bank's a big company. It's like, I don't know how long it would take a fresh new hire straight out of college to get time with Jim Ryan if they just came through a normal process. But I think, again, through our fellowship, there's that like catalyzing factor for your network and hopefully your career as a result. And that's what we see play out. But it's just pretty amazing. I'm on some level jealous of these Ore fellows.
Sure. No, exactly. I want to talk a little bit about, you had mentioned Patrick Lencioni's book, The Ideal Team Player. You talked about those attributes that you look for in Ore Fellows. How did you settle on that? Or, you know, what is it about that kind of framework that seemed to really resonate with, you know, your board and your organization?
Yeah, you know, that's something that's been a part of our organization for a really long time. Really long time, as far as I understand, and certainly predates me here. But I think, you know, as we grow, again, we're trying, the people that on a fellow side end up being attracted to Ore because there is a little chaos in it. You don't always know what job you're going to be in or what company you're going to be at, which for some people freaks them out when they're really big planners. And it probably would me too at that age. But for us, again, we're trying to find those generalists where it's like, these are great people, that they're quick learners, they can lead others. And so that they can come into a company and quickly pick up on whatever skills they need for that role and have an impact. So what's more important is maybe like the intangibles and those character traits. So focusing on ones that were easily codified, like humble, hungry, smart, for us made a lot of sense. Those are the type of people we like to work around and like that we appreciate having as teammates. And so I think for us, it made a lot of sense. And I even remember when I started at Lessonly, every new hire got the Ideal Team Player book as well. And so it's kind of funny to see it transcend not just Ore Fellowship and the fellows coming into our program and the values we live, try to instill here, but then even for the opportunities the fellows are invested in too, and they're creating out there in the world, these values are transcending that too. So it's been, I think it's really interesting to see that come across, but it's largely, these are the people we want in the state in positions where they're influencing and leading others, is people with these character traits. So it's what we focus on.
Sure. And based on, you know, if you think about the future and the importance of technology, and very likely there's going to be a less need of like human technical skills due to technology, AI, things like that. I think that framework of humble, hungry, smart is going to really set apart people as they, you know, move into their careers. And I think those are the types of people that might almost have like a generalist technical background, but that will be incredibly valuable to organizations in the future.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, there's people will tell you they know what's going to happen with this sort of AI boom that's going on, but nobody really knows. And it's going to be the Wild West for a time. But I think the people that are going to be successful are the ones that are adaptable and probably have a little bit more of like a generalist skill set and can bounce around and are more open to, I would say, like the chaos of life. There's bad chaos and good chaos, but I think actually being willing to embrace some of that, where you're not in control and you don't know what's happening, but being able to bob and weave will be really, really important as, you know, the world sort of changes around us. So I think that's some of the stuff we try to work with on fellows of, we'll do specific workshops on topics, and we'll need to start incorporating AI as part of that on how to leverage this to keep moving fast. Because I know I use it. Ted, I don't know your experience, but I think at least on a weekly basis, if not more, I'm using ChatGPT to help me. I do a lot of writing, so it helps me out on writing, thinking through problems. I've even done some coding with it, and I'm a very not technical person, but it wrote like 200 lines of code and built an app for me. So like very interesting stuff that is going to change the game.
Sure. Well, one of the things I also wanted to talk about today is, I know a big focus of OAR in Central Indiana has been on encouraging entrepreneurship. And I think it's safe to say that the Indianapolis region has had a really successful entrepreneurial ecosystem. And probably there are some aspects of that that we in Southwest Indiana could learn from. What do you think are, a few things that either a community or a region can do to really encourage new businesses, new ideas? Just be curious, based on your experience at IEDC and then also at OAR Fellowship.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think candidly, a lot of people don't have super clean answers, and I'm not going to be any different from them. I think there's a part of this answer that's cultural. I think there's cultural elements, I think, in Indiana generally, of a lack of risk-taking that regions or communities need to like help rally around. And like, how do you de-risk things? You know, at the state, it was looking at what are the primary concerns of somebody that would be a successful entrepreneur, which is generally around 40. It's like, okay, what does their life look like? They might have some kids. They might have like a salary of X amount that they can't afford to lose. Like there's childcare considerations, health insurance. So are there ways you can support them making that leap by de-risking some of those other elements in their life? I think from a very early age, providing examples. I mean, we already know some of the stats around like if you're not reading at a third grade level, the rest of your life doesn't look so hot. Like there's really early indicators of like, hey, you got to get this right. And it has a deep impact on the rest of your trajectory. So I think to the earliest extent we can, getting plugged in with communities and helping teach this culture of entrepreneurship. And I have a little bit more nuanced view on entrepreneurship generally. I credit my thinking to Don Wetrick over at Startup Foundation. They run Innovate Within, a high school innovation and entrepreneurship group, which has a teacher cohort and a high school pitch competition, really great group. But their tagline is that they want entrepreneurs or people that see problems as opportunities. And it's, I would encourage people as they're trying to think about entrepreneurship is trying to instill that first. And then from there, you can do the wraparound of like the business creation around those opportunities. But I think teaching maybe that's first principles thinking or just the ability to not get overwhelmed by problems. Ryan Holiday has a book called The Obstacle is the Way, but probably looking at things more through that lens of how do you see a problem in front of you and be able to break it down into its component parts and then think of a solution from there and then pitch that solution, get buy-in, and then execute against it. That's really all entrepreneurship is, wrapped in the framework of a business. And so I think if you can teach people to approach problems that way, that's going to make them better employees, better leaders, spouses, citizens. I mean, I'm even pitching my kids every time I try to get them to go to bed. I'm like, why it's a good idea for them to go to bed, right? And you're always pitching, whether you realize it or not. So I think helping get people get more comfortable with that and lose some of the negative baggage associated with it.
Sure. I like that approach too, because for a region to be successful economically, we need established businesses. We need diversity in industries and types of businesses. And as I talked about before, longevity of businesses, established to startups. And so one of the things that's important to note is that it's not just about necessarily starting a new business. It's about an entrepreneurial mindset. And that mindset is very important in existing businesses. And
totally.
our existing businesses would likely be more successful if they had more entrepreneurial thinking and they had, you know, layers of leadership really thinking about problems and possible opportunities and solutions and new goods and services rather than just kind of, you know, maybe the typical mindset, which is, you know, I see, like, especially in a manufacturing industry where you have, let's just keep optimizing and making what we already do a little bit better and more efficient each year.
Yeah. You're sort of quibbling over 1-5% incremental changes, right? And then on some level, sometimes you're leaving behind some of those, like, larger jumps of 10, 20, 30% increases in efficiency because you're not willing to, you know, like, slay the golden goose, or they talk about the innovator's dilemma where it's too hard to break what's working now to be able to build something better. It is, it gets scary. And, like, I'm not here to say that it's not. I just think it's necessary. The fact that it's scary or not isn't really part of it. It's like, is it necessary or not? And it is. And Ted, you and I have both led teams. It's how much would you appreciate it if your team approached problems as opportunities and were able to, like, hey, Ted, this is something that's been bothering me since I started. I've been sort of tinkering with it in the off season, and here's what I think we could do to change how we operate here, and it would help and solve this problem for everybody. It's like, that'd be incredible. Like, who doesn't want that in an employee who comes to them with that sort of stuff? So I think to the extent that we can, like, facilitate that growth and that approach would be really meaningful in all facets of our communities.
For sure. And it almost reminds me of one leader talked to me about had instructed his employees to say, don't come to me with problems, come to me with solutions. And it's a different mindset that most of us can pull problems out of the air. We detect them, we experience them, but
for sure,
I think, you know, some of the most talented and successful people are able to harness a problem and then, like, transition to a solution that really benefits the end user.
Yeah. I think, you know, I generally agree with the don't bring me problems, bring me solutions statement. I do think there's sometimes where it's like people just don't have enough context to come up with a solution. And so I don't want any of the teams I'm on or are working with to ever feel like they can't say, like, hey, I don't know what to do with this. Like, this is a big stinking problem. We got to fix it. Like, that should always be brought up and we got to address the problems. But ideally, they're coming with more solutions than just problems.
Good. Yeah, I agree. I think there is some context and some nuance that is important to note, because you know, a truly successful team is going to be a team where people feel psychologically safe enough to bring forward problems and discuss them and you know, admit that they don't necessarily know the right answer, or they're trying to figure things out, or they're struggling.
Yeah, that'd be super healthy. And I would love that conversation on a team too, you know? It's like all those things. As a leader, it's like these are things I would love to see in any team. Like, you want to incentivize that sort of behavior as best you can. So,
for sure. Stephen, I want to thank you for your time today. This has been a really great conversation, and I hope that the Evansville region is excited about this possibility. I think about 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 talented people coming to this area on an annual basis. And over time, that really has a cumulative effect and of bringing in talent, of exposing our community to new ideas. And based on the track record of the Orr Fellowship in Central Indiana, hopefully that also means there's a really strong retention of those individuals too. I also wanted to mention, We currently have one student or alumna from USI who is in the Orr Fellowship, Kaylin Wessel. And I thought I saw something the other day. Was she just elected to a position with the Orr Fellowship?
Yeah, she was. So just quick context, fellows in their second year of the program are allowed to be nominated for and elected by their peers, so the other fellows, for positions on what we call the Fellowship Leadership Team, or FLT. There's about seven of those positions, and they all actually report to the executive team here, like in the actual HQ of Orr. So Catherine, my counterpart, who does a lot of the fellow engagement, they report into her. And so we just had our elections just recently, and I'm super excited for a lot of reasons, but Kaylin got elected into the director of recruitment position, which I don't know that I could pick a better person. That person's focused on recruiting fellows and helping support our programming to get applicants for our program. And so having somebody very passionate about Evansville, she really, really, really cares about the Evansville region. So I'm excited to be able to work alongside her as we try to roll this out. And she'll be a great add. And certainly she's an alumni of the Evansville region and USI that you all should be proud of.
Yeah, I'm excited to make that connection. So really a great connection for the Evansville area, and then also with the OR Fellowship. So how can people find out more about OR Fellowship?
Yeah, thanks for asking. ORfellowship.org will be a great one-stop shop for you. It's going to have all the information that you might want. I think I'm more than happy to have people reach out to me too. Stephen@ORfellowship.org will get you to me. So feel free to reach out. Happy to talk about OR all day long, because I do anyway. So.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Stephen, for being with us today. I'm excited to see where this goes, and just the positive impact that the OR Fellowship has on the Evansville region. And I appreciate you sharing a little more about the program. I've been involved with it too, so if any of our listeners have any questions, they can feel free to reach out to me. And then also Tyler Stock at EREP has been involved. His role as a executive director of talent, EVV, he'd be another good resource. So we appreciate your time today, Stephen. Thanks for all your good work in the state of Indiana and for your extra effort with this expansion. I know that's going to be a big task, but I think we'll definitely see the fruits of our labor.
Yeah. You know, Ted, I'm blessed to be able to work on stuff that matters. It's hard work, but it's good work. So thankful to be a part of it.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
To learn more about Dr. Tad Dickel and the T.A. Dickel Group, please visit tadickel.com. Thank you for joining us.